Okay, it's great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, the Wall Street Wizard, Peter Grandich. Well, Peter Grandich has published commentary on the mining and metals markets. He's currently the senior market commentator for Money Talks. Welcome back, Peter Grandich.
Always a pleasure to speak with you.
You know, in the most recent report, more physical gold was withdrawn from the Shanghai Exchange vaults than, well, the combined weekly global mining output. It sounds like the folks who really know about gold are entering something of a minor gold rush here. What factors do you see behind this story, and how do you think that could impact the precious metals markets?
I think what we've been witnessing, and while we had to go through a very painful 2 years, we've seen, as articles have been written now by a few, gold's really control move from the West to the Far East. And I think this is playing a more and more of a bigger role. The paper market that trades here on the COMEX, or I like to call it the CRIMEX, continues to lose its influence on the price of gold. Even when it has been attacked in recent weeks and months, some of these attacks last only literally for hours and no more than a few days or a week or two. And that's because the physical demand for gold is so overwhelming. And as I believe you and I have discussed in the past, people who are really making money in the world are the ones that are acquiring gold. And so I'm just not at all surprised to see that such great demand continues out of China. And it helps explain that in the last 2 years, while a lot of shenanigans have gone on, which really started when the Germans asked for their gold back and couldn't get it, that the Chinese have been staunch buyers, but they've not chased the price. They've absorbed everything we wanted to give them from the West and then some. And now I think the physical metal market is overwhelming the paper market. We're watching now the trading on the paper market, as I like to call the COMEX. Literally, whenever these attacks come, they can only last now for a few hours or no more than a few days. And that's just another indication that the market is getting stronger and that we've seen pretty well a major bottom put in, and we're going to work our way higher for the balance of the year.
Gold repatriation, that story is clearly on everyone's mind lately. The 300 tons of gold owed by the U.S. to the Bundesbank will be shipped apparently in very tiny increments, as small as 1 ton per week. The story that's being circulated is that insurance companies that insure the transport of this valuable asset, of this money, of gold, simply do not want to ship in large amounts. And because, as we all remember, the stories of Spanish galleons filled from the keel all the way up to the hold with gold and silver bullion and trinkets and jewelry, they don't want to risk the loss of this wealth. You know, I really question whether that holds much merit, the story. Think about the Hunt brothers were going to ship tons of silver right out of Texas directly to the coffers in Switzerland, you know, a few decades ago, you know, by airline. France has already returned most of it, something like 32 tons, whereas we've only returned about 5 tons. I'd like your thoughts on this, especially considering that these bars are stashed deeply beneath the Federal Reserve in Manhattan. Some folks like Gata.org question if the gold is really available or if it's maybe been rehypothecated or leased out.
Even if we were to take the story on face value, and even if there was such a high cost, I can assure you that with transportation these days and big sonic jets that can fly pretty fast and carry large loads, it would take far faster than 7.5 years to return 20% of it. That's been the farce all along. The problem has been is the general media, the politicians, and the toothless regulators don't want to face that reality. Because let's flip the coin for a change. Let's just say that you and I and the Gata people and others are right, that the gold has been leased out, that all the gold that's supposed to be where it, and owned by it's supposed to own, isn't there. Could you imagine if that story broke, what would transpire to the price? And then the bigger part of that, and while we that own gold will be happy because suddenly our gold will be worth $3,000, $5,000, $8,000, whatever, $10,000 an ounce, whatever that gold price would be. The biggest story, the bigger impact on why they don't want that out is not for an $8,000 or $10,000 price gold, But really the last line of trust that anybody could have in government would be gone, because then you have to call into question on everything. Does the United States own anything? Are the numbers that it says that it owes to Medicaid and Social Security, is it possible that they can now not pay that? The ramifications of that is so big that I just don't believe that they'll do everything they can never to allow that to come out. But in the long run, that really won't matter, because what we've witnessed is, and this is a thing I know we've discussed in the past, and that is the key in this last 2 years was this. Whenever something is suddenly not wanted by people, there's just an outright selling. You can't find bids anywhere. It doesn't matter when there was a gas shortage, it was cars, when homes were no longer wanted, everybody was a seller, you couldn't get a bid on a home. And yet through this decline, which was the fact that the quantitative easing was going to end, there would be no demand for gold, and the $800 gold was around the corner, what we saw was so strong physical demand that the physical price people were willing to pay was as much as $100 or $200 more than the current paper price, which really said that the paper price was the phony price. So I just think everything we've gone through, as painful as it was, it really set us up for a much more sustainable and much longer move to the upside, which coincided this past week with us finally taking out a paper resistance area in the gold price that I think now is going to propel us very quickly up to 1,300, 1,500, 1,400. It would not surprise me that we even reach that number before the end of February.
You know, you have a lot of solid company that share your thoughts there. Jeffrey Christian, who had been notably negative and bearish on the precious metals over the past few years, now has entered the bullish camp, and his targets, I think, mirror yours pretty closely. But I also wanted to talk a bit about the story that we were discussing a few moments ago, read between the lines a bit, about just why it is that the world is losing faith in the U.S. And there seems to be several factors converging. For instance, we have the downgrade of U.S. debt, Fed profligacy, and then there's the ever-present debt ceiling fiasco that we hear so much about. And I guess we'll touch on the third one in a moment. Is it this trifecta that people are worried about?
Well, A, it's a combination, but I also think one that we didn't toss in there that needs to be tossed in is that is the United States has lost its political prowess. It was, you know, it truly was, like it or not, 20, 30 years ago, the leader of the world. It's not anymore. This current president accelerated that discord and discord towards American politics and American ways of life. It is very, very hard now to go anywhere in the world and say you're an American and not maybe keep one eye opener. And that just didn't exist 20, 30 years ago. There's very, very few places that I feel that you could do that. I think as Americans, yes, we still have Canada. I think pretty well. I think I can sleep comfortable in Canada. Canadians aren't about to storm into my hotel room. But I have to tell you, there aren't many other places in the world. So I think politically has been a factor. And part of that is how we've handled ourselves and mismanaged ourselves fiscally and economically. I have to tell you this. I noted this on my blog this morning. I got interviewed by a very, very well-known tip-of-the-tongue general financial publication in the United States, and the lady that was interviewing me clearly, in my view, was a card-carrying member of what I like to call the "don't worry, be happy" crowd. And she accused me of being a fear mongrel. And I said, "Well, why do you feel that?" After she interviewed me, she says, "Well, you talk all about this debt and deficit stuff, and realistically, America, whenever things get tough, they find a way to do it, and Washington will solve its debt problem." And I played for her, or I sent her after the interview was over, a video that I put up on my blog that recently come out and showed all the recent both Republican and Democrats over the last 20-something years talking about the budget deficits, and each time it got worse, this was going to be solved and there would not be a problem. And it's been kind of called, I think that video that's gone viral, it's been kind of called Groundhog Day. And this is the thinking that lives on Wall Street, that despite this enormous amount of debt, which I argue now America can no longer pay out of discretionary income and service that principal amount, And if we keep adding to the debt, it will get to the point where we can't service the interest. And yet people go about it, and then we have a 200-point update because the latest person to take over the Fed says everything is still pretty hunky-dory. And this is why I think we started this conversation about strong physical demand in China and Far East, is because they recognize that's not the case. And that's why they're positioning themselves and don't want to have U.S. dollars and want to have plenty insurance against the paper assets of U.S. assets that they own. And I just think we're going to see more of that become keenly aware and a growing movement towards that as we get later into the year.
If the 11 o'clock news or weather person says, you know, we see a potential hurricane on the horizon or a tornado or severe weather headed your way, and maybe it doesn't come exactly as planned and, you know, or whatnot, you're not going to get nasty grams. Unfortunately, some of these issues, I think, require a few more gray cells upstairs than most people want to apply. Some people become overwhelmed by what they perceive as being excessive negativity. But the reality is, every now and then, a really severe situation does come along, and it does require everybody to make some important changes. At any rate, I'd like to move on here. You know, Congress raised the debt ceiling three times since 2011. And last Friday, the U.S. Treasury enacted emergency measures on reports that the official government coffers have dwindled to about $50 billion. May sound like a lot. It's really not much to keep the cogs spinning in this monstrosity we call a government. Now, the U.S. government will have exhausted all these funds by the end of February. That's this month. And the debt limit goes back to the original $17.2 trillion. Up until now, this has just certainly seemed to be a non-event, you know, more fear-mongering, if you will. But some people are beginning to caution us that maybe that this time or one of these times music does stop. I'd like to know what you think could happen and what might be the ramifications for people's portfolios.
Well, there's no question the can is becoming harder to kick, although we saw on the heels of Yeltsin's testimony and talk of a partisan increase of the deficit bill going through without a fight, somehow that was positive news and give cause for the Dow to rise 200 points, that we're willing to raise and increase our debt limit, but somehow that's good news. But that's the conditioning that the financial world has conditioned. Don't understand the fact of what levels we've gone to and rest and see how many parts of the world distrust us, as you spoke earlier in this interview. And that is one of the reasons why gold is doing so well outside of the United States, and people are very much literally waiting online to own it and don't want to own U.S. assets. But that's the difference, and that's what's going to be the difference, what we expect. And I must point this out, and, you know, 30 years in and around the financial arena, I don't understand. People are more than willing to have car insurance and home insurance, and they don't look for their car to be stolen, and they don't look for their home to be burnt. But if you dare mention gold just as an insurance, just in case the paper people on Wall Street got it wrong, so I was called a fear-mong person. We should only hope that I'm wrong and you're wrong, and gold doesn't go to $3,000 or $4,000. Because if it does, I can tell you that the world as we know it, and particularly financial assets, are in much worse shape than they currently are if we have a $3,000 or $4,000 gold price.
It amazes me how, if you ask people, what type of insurance do you have for your portfolio? Do you use, for instance, sell stops on some of your stocks? You hear the common reply, no, I'm a long-term investor. That sounds to me like trading. I'm not interested in that. Well, to me, that sounds like going up on the high wire without any type of net whatsoever. Any portfolio, regardless of your stage in life, needs to be balanced. I don't want to sound like a broken record. The technical terms here, if we want to toss them around, balancing your betas. And that's what gold and silver and precious metal stocks and equities do simply better than any other asset class that I'm aware of. I mean, a very small 10, 15, 20% investment, as I know you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, balances off a portfolio. And what that really means is when one goes up and the other goes down, they tend to even out, and you're better off than just buying, let's say, index funds and whatnot. So I think we've covered that well. I wanted to move on here. You know, apparently there's some legislation here with regard to bank preparedness. A memo that was intercepted from the Federal Reserve, 8 bank holding companies, they're called BHCs in the U.S., according to the memo, are at risk. It didn't get much press coverage. Some of the banks include, of course, BOA, Bank of New York, Mellon, J.P. Morgan, just the usual suspects, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo. We've heard of them all. They were the ones with Paulson and Bernanke as they were trying to hammer out a deal during the credit crisis. Well, apparently they're at risk now. Well, you know, Peter, we've been talking about this on this show. You, me, and many of my other guests now for years. They're holding something like $250 to $300 trillion in notional derivatives with interest rate exposure. Why is it that they're just waking up now that our whole banking system is at risk?
My whole feeling on the banking system went out in 2009 because we discovered then that not only during the height of the mortgage scam were some of the biggest household names in the financial institution world selling mortgages to people worldwide that they knew couldn't pay, but we would soon learn that they actually took the other side and bet against the people that they would profit if they fail. And I've always tried to tell people to try to put that in the most common terms, that be as if the car manufacturers sold cars that they knew would eventually crash, and then they bought life insurance on the people that they sold the cars to, so when they crashed and died, they would collect. Any group that could act in that manner, and this was universal, this wasn't an isolated incident, I can't trust. So it doesn't come as a surprise to me to know that banks are leveraged like that, and we're going to have another financial crisis. The problem is, and when it's so common and it happens, it'll be too late to act. The problem is that most people, even if they believe it, I honestly believe that they honestly believe it, they try to ignore it and hope that it doesn't happen. That's how I think the world is operating in the financial industry. I think they're keenly aware. I think people realize this is out there. And it's kind of like that game that you played as a kid where there was one more kid than a chair. And they would play the music and it would stop. And all you hope for if you were in that game, that you would beat that last kid to the last seat. And that's why I think a lot of people are operating on Wall Street. I honestly believe they realize that things are as bad as you and I are discussing, but they think they can milk this for as long as they can, and they'll be able to get out whole before that day of reckoning comes. Some will, but most won't.
I don't want to get too deep here, so I'll keep it brief, but I think that our whole economics system and really just the mechanism itself seems to have been hijacked in the last 20, 30 years by this neoclassical viewpoint, which John Maynard Keynes and many others, and many of them would be turning in their graves here, takes the idea that as long as we can, as you say, you know, juice the system, keep pouring in that liquidity, eventually this train is going to get back on the tracks. Hat tip to them since LBJ. You know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it's always gotten us back on track. The problem is every now and then that 45-degree turn around a mountain bend comes. And this is something that only a student, I think, of the markets can understand. You have this rogue wave, you might call it, or a black swan, it's been called. There's so many monikers. And then suddenly you keep trying to juice the system, and it doesn't work. And we're seeing signs of that all over the place. I think any Econ Student 101 knows, look, we've had interest rates at virtually zero for 5 or 6 years, it seems like. $4 trillion pumped in by the Fed. They're trying to say we're in the middle of a recovery. Jobs are growing, and we're seeing job growth. And when the GDP is a little bit better, but ultimately unemployment is still a mess because everybody's dropping out of the workforce. The participation rate is abysmal. So it's giving this illusion, fata morgana, in front of us, and in reality, it's not working. So, and I've thrown a lot out there. The question for you is, what are we going to do with a Fed that's now tapering? We saw last Wednesday, they're going to continue reducing. They've dropped about $20 billion a month on their toxic mortgage purchases, QE as they call it. Is this a big factor, or do you think that the gold and silver investors and markets were anticipating tapering, and now this is a non-event?
I think it's come a non-event for the metals, and quite frankly, I think in 3 to 6 month time frame, as the economic numbers get worse, not better, you'll see a major call for the tapering to whatever level it's at to be eased or actually stopped, and then eventually reversed. And so I no longer worry or believe in it. And if you did notice in these last 2 months going into these meetings and also around the employment number, which used to be a classic time when the gold paper would attack the price of gold. We didn't see that, and that was a signal that the ploys that were used to take gold down the last couple of years no longer were working. And again, I go back to the main reason it's not working is the physical market's overwhelming the paper pushers. And that's what just gives me such silence that we're going to return to higher levels. Now, I do want to say this before this ends. I do think it's going to take us a while to get through the old support level of 1500 or 1550. It was a very, very long and key support level. When something like that was broken and broken down to the levels that we saw afterwards, I don't think the first or even second time that we approach those levels, we're going to have to build a base and build just under that level before we break two. But I really believe before this year is out, we are going to test that 1500 to 1550 level. Not, like I said, not likely go through it for a while, but when we do go through it, then it'll be a march to new highs.
As I tell friends and family, that it's the fundamentals that should bring us into the markets, and it's the technicals that help us with the timing. This was a sea change event from 2011 until 2013. You might argue it was much overdue. A 12-year unbroken rally, pardon the pun, but its mettle needed to be tested. We see a scenario where I think much of our expectations have been lowered to such a low level that you just can't help but start to salivate a little bit when you think of the appetizing opportunities that abound. I mean, presenting a unique opportunity for investors to accumulate real unencumbered wealth at a big discount, especially just as this global currency crisis. It seems to be so systemic and behind the scenes, but just ask anybody who's lived in Argentina, you know, in 2001, or in Chile, you know, back in the, I guess, 50s and 60s. I mean, and it's one that I think we need to be keeping our eye on as our treasury bond lost its AAA status for the first time in our history. I think there's also that old Wall Street adage that says that markets tend to be forward-looking by about 6 months or so. So the only thing we'd have to watch out for is if they tapered an excessive amount. That might give a temporary jolt to the markets on the downside. What would be the probability that we could see a final capitulation in the precious metals markets?
I think we've had it already. I'm absolutely convinced, with no hiding behind a rock, in case I'm wrong. I don't think there is. I think we've seen it. I think we're on a renewed up leg in the market. And I concur something with what you said earlier. I know this. They say that only two things are guaranteed, death and taxes. Well, I think I can guarantee a third thing. If the Dow Jones Industrial Average went up for 12 straight years and it went from 256 to 1,900 and change and then fell back to 1,200 during a year that declined 30%, universally the only thing we would have heard is, what a wonderful thing that that happened. What a great opportunity for you to get in. And that's exactly what happened with gold. It went up for 12 straight years. And in 1 year's time when it declined, basically everybody called it dead. You couldn't get by a day without some report written or in the media negative on gold. And at the end of the day, anything that went up for 12 years was allowed to go down for 1 year. It doesn't matter what it was. So I'm not going to hedge. I'm absolutely convinced there is no more capitulation. We've seen the total washout, and now the gold market is strong enough to move. Like I said, it will come into significant resistance at 1500 to 1550. But from here, $300 to $350 or a 25% move, I can live with that resistance.
Could you please tell folks more about your work?
Sure. Well, we now write for moneytalks.net, and then separately, I do financial planning up here for U.S. citizens to a company called Trinity Financial Sports and Entertainment Management.
Excellent. Peter Grandage, thanks for making time for us today.
Thank you.